My name is Ruby Harris, and I'm married to Dr. Harris. And a role model is really just an example. And because of the diversity of the black culture, there is a need and a demand for different types of role models. There is a need and demand for different types of role models. You could talk about honesty and self-destination, those people who are in the mode of wanting to be themselves, choose their own destiny. They need role models that portray that. There are role models for people who just want to beat the system. They just have decided that away with this and we'll figure out how to beat the system. There are role models for education, wealth and fame, business success, marriage and family, acceptance, self-acceptance. And so there are all types of people in the black culture looking for a role model to fit their particular need or their particular situation. So then, because I'm black does not make me a perfect role model for the black race. So I think that's very important that everybody understand that because of the diversity of needs and ideas in the black community, no one black person is a perfect role model for the black community. Also, there are some negative, if you can look at it in that vein, and also some positive aspects to being considered a role model. One is that one may have to deny yourself to promote the good of the race. For example, right now with Clarence Thomas being a possible nominee to the Supreme Court, then people are saying, well, is he as good as Thurgood Marshall? Or Thurgood Marshall thought this and Clarence Thomas thought that. And so instead of being glad that here is another black man who has reached the pinnacle of fighting in the law career, then, you know, it could be an argument over which one is better, when in fact, both of them are very good models because they are black liberals and black conservatives. Mm-hmm. And so both of them are very good role models. Also, the religious versus the secular. Now, I don't listen to rock and roll, and I don't think people should go around listening to rock and roll that promote immorality. When I was growing up, there were all kind of songs that they didn't promote good behavior. And one was called Me and Mrs. Jones, We Got a Thing Going On. Well, obviously it wasn't Mr. Jones singing, so here's a song promoting adultery. And another one was called, and these are all old because it's been a long time since I've been in that arena. The another one was called If Loving You Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Do Right. Well, see, then that, if I listen to that, especially during my formative years, day in and day out and day in and day out, it won't take long for my thinking to get turned in that direction. And so even though I'm not a fan at all of rock music, but I cannot deny that Michael Jackson and Prince, with their success, have been a positive role model to a lot of black youth who say, okay, they made it, I can make it. So then there could be what we call a negative aspect in the sense of religious versus secular role models. And as a black people, most of our positive role models have come from the church. Most of our heritage and culture came from the church. And so then we have to also consider things like that. Also, the idea of commitment versus success. If I want to be a positive role model, there are some avenues to success that I will not pursue because of my personal commitment to show a hardworking, ethical way of getting places. If I were a lawyer, for example, I would not defend someone who was a known guilty person, whether it was in drugs or mafia or embezzlement or whatever. And sometimes I ask my children, if you're a Christian and you're a lawyer, because I try to tell them, you can be a Christian lawyer. But now, if the person comes to you and says, I'm guilty, will you take my case? And by the way, the fee is going to be $1 million. Then suddenly my commitment to being true to myself and my religion versus maybe a couple of weeks in court and being $1 million richer, that's quite a balance if you're not committed to the Lord totally. Of course, you know, theoretically all of us are so committed to the Lord and the Bible and the ways of the Bible, there would be no decision, whatever. But these are types of things that people really have to examine before they consider being a role model. Now, some positive things are that it's an opportunity to shape lives. I have an opportunity. The children look at me, and for this period in their lives, I'm a very successful, very good role model. And you probably have had children, and whatever the teacher says is much more important than what parents know. Mm-hmm. Parents don't know a thing, the teacher says. So at this stage in life, I have a great opportunity for molding and shaping lives and ideas and attitudes, and also to give hope, to tell people you can make it. There are things you can do. And even though maybe you don't have the money, I was telling someone, I was married before I ever even saw the Pacific Ocean. And of course, Dr. Harris is quite a traveler. And at the time we were married, we were extremely poor, and he was in school. And we didn't even have a suitcase, but almost every weekend we packed this brown bag, and he would take me off, and much to the chagrin of my mother, who was sure that I just wasn't going to live long, and take me down to California. I hadn't been exposed to these things. And so then I was talking to a young girl here today, and this is her 8th year of coming to Holden for the summer, and she's about 13. Well, quite naturally, the advantages of being exposed to a place like this, you know, are quite fantastic. Or yesterday, Dr. Harris was talking to a boy who has been coming for 10 years, and he's only 11. And before this year, I never even knew Holden was up here in these mountains. And so then the idea is to be a role model to expose people to different things. And so when I go back, then I'm going to tell my class about Holden Village and recycling garbage and, you know, living at the top of the hill and going every day. And so these are things that will broaden their horizons, give them something to reach for. And so it isn't that I'm a noble, wonderful, marvelous person. I just happen to be married to one. I don't have much choice in technology. And I've done a lot of things that maybe I would or would not have done having been left onto my own. So I don't want to sound like I'm some wonderful person and I should be the example to everyone who's black. So that isn't the idea at all. But it's to just let you know that there are difficulties in appreciating things that you haven't been exposed to. And the same thing we were talking earlier in the class today, that a library is a very formidable looking thing if you're not used to a library. And so you say, well, why don't they just go to the library and look it up? But if you are not used to a library, and you go in there and there's rows and rows of books and computers on how to look things up and card files, and everybody else is rushing here and there and they look like they know what they're doing, you could be kind of intimidated. So it's more than just getting off your duck and doing something. It's being exposed and realizing that there is hope, and that's one of the things about role models. So there are a lot of black role models that I don't agree with at all, but I do have to agree that they are doing some good. So there are a lot of times that it's a compromising thing. Like I say, I wouldn't go to a Michael Jackson or Prince or any of those people, but I cannot deny that they're making a positive influence on a lot of black children. So this time we're going to show the video, and then Dr. Harris will present what he has.
And just thank you, Mrs. Harris. Just a few moments before looking at the video, I would say that the structure of our school is such that we have several groups, several support groups, and one is our Parents Advocacy Committee. They actually had bake sales and garage sales and other kinds of fundraisers to hire professionals in Tacoma to create this video. And it's about 6 or 7 minutes long. And I just wanted you to know that we have a group of wonderful parents, and a lot of them are from low-income backgrounds. Some of them work in various areas where they could very well afford to do what they're doing, but they have the interest in their children, we call them our children, and the school, and they actually got together a couple years ago, raised money to do this, and I wanted to share this video with you. It's about 6 minutes or so long.
A community draws its strength from its people, individuals, families.
Men and women who contribute their skills and talents to building a strong and healthy tomorrow.
But it doesn't just happen. A rich and vital society is the product of the commitment and the energy of many people and organizations focused on a common goal.
The dream that is America, where our children can grow to realize their full potential.
Eastside Christian Academy has made that commitment to instill through quality education the moral and ethical values that will enrich the lives of its students and create a positive impact on this community and this nation.
We've been offering individualized instruction to our children They receive plenty of love, care, positive climate. Their regular field trips, last week we took them to Point Defiance Zoo, and they've been to Hood Canal for oysters. They do so well on their test scores. In fact, the lowest test score that a child can get at this school is 80%. Let me say it again, that we are indeed seeking the peace of the city, even of the world, and that the health, the social, the cultural health, the economic health of our children, we feel very strongly dependent upon what we're doing here at the Eastside Christian Academy.
Like a beacon in the storm, Eastside Christian Academy is a shining light, illuminating the path to a self-sufficient, independent, and productive society.
This is where it begins, in elementary schools. Hi, my name is Darrell Franklin. I'm a member of the Buffalo Bills. I have recently visited the Eastside Christian Academy, and it's a wonderful place for kids to learn. It's a teaching institution that I believe and I truly stand by. The thing that impressed me the most was the caring by the teachers, the principal, and everyone around us that was associated with the school. I believe education starts in the family. The family is the first part of education. At the Eastside Christian Academy, they're using families with strong backgrounds, you know, teaching kids from 1 to 8th grade. And I was so impressed by what the kids had learned there. I was astonished. People can never take away education. They can take away my football skills. Someone can say I'm not a good football player, or maybe I'm over the hill, but one thing they cannot take away is my mind and my education. I was so impressed with these kids that we have to sit back as a society and wonder, where does it begin? This is where it begins.
And at Eastside, our program strengthens the whole person, spirit, mind, and body.
Kids today are faced with so many challenges, so many struggles. Around every corner is another threat to this generation's existence. Broken families, drugs, gangs, violence, crime. It seems like it just keeps going. Eastside Christian Academy is a place where we're trying to put a stop to that. To offer the kids an alternative way of life, to give them a place to go that has a future. This is where it begins.
My children go here now. This is their first year here. And just since coming here to school, I've noticed a big improvement in their attitudes and the way they care about themselves and their schoolwork. She couldn't read last year. She couldn't comprehend what she read. But this year, she's reading 150 words a minute, and she's proud of it. And I'm proud. I'm happy for them. So I would take them out. We watched on TV yesterday a commercial about the school system and the drugs that they had there. And my daughter, she said, "Mommy, don't take me out of my school. Don't ever do that. Would you please?" And I said, "Okay, you'll stay here." So I'm excited.
This excitement is shared by all, the children and the parents, who are working together to realize the dream.
I spent the past 4 weeks working as a volunteer at the Eastside Christian Academy, and the thing that has really stood out to me is the way that Dr. and Sister Harris and the rest of the staff are really committed to realizing that this is where it begins for their students. They spend a lot of time and energy communicating to students that they are and can be successful, and it is their realization of this that has made it such a rewarding experience for me, because they really do believe that this is where it begins.
But it takes a larger effort, a community-wide commitment, to achieve this vital goal.
Of the Diploma Earth Initiative. Today I call upon all of the sectors of the Tacoma Pierce County community, including the Black leadership, the Black educators, and other members of the Black community, the Black churches, the Black business community, and all of the citizens of the Black community, as well as the businesses and citizens of the White community, to support this outstanding educational Eastside or Christian Academy. And every time I come to the Eastside Community Church, to your Eastside Christian Academy, every time I get the privilege to go to the ranch, and all of you have come to the ranch, I feel a sense of pride and dignity, and Tacoma appreciates and thanks Roland Davis, Dr. Harris, and all of you for your leadership in helping to make the east side of Tacoma a better community for all of us.
By contributing to our children's education, we pave the way for all of us to reap the good fruits of the effort. Help us plant healthy seeds for tomorrow, for our community and our nation. This is where it begins.
Then, continuing the discussion regarding black role models, and I'll talk for a little while, and for me a little while might be a year, a long time, but I come from a family of talkers. We didn't have television when I came up, and so we talked a lot. But I'll talk for a little while, and then there may be some questions that arose from the video presentation or some other questions that you would have about the academy or questions in general. Feel free to do that. I would say that as far as black role models, I want to talk briefly about the black family and the black church. Now, our church, located there in the South Shane area of Tacoma, and Nancy Vignette mentioned that today on the east side of Tacoma. Our pastor is a very energetic individual, quite a visionary. Our school is two or three blocks from the church. The school is the youngest of six ministries of the church. People see the things that we do and they think we have 3,000 or 4,000 members. Come see us on any given Sunday, there are 75 or 80 people there. But we wear a lot of hats, we work hard, we sometimes stay up all night if something needs to be done, and literally. And that's the way we work. But the school is the youngest of the ministries of the Eastside Community Church there in Tacoma. The other thing that, and I'll mention briefly, we have a daycare there at the church, and when Governor Dan Evans was in office, he actually came and dedicated our daycare there. And we serve low-income people who are able to leave their children there as early as 6 o'clock in the morning. And then the daycare is open until 6 that afternoon, so they're able to go out and work. Also, a couple of blocks from the church, we have an alcohol and drug rehabilitation center. Likewise, it serves our young people, and they can get counseling. And once again, that's the United Way agency, and they get assistance from other areas as well. 2 or 3 miles from there, we have a thrift store, wherein people who don't have necessary clothing, for example, or bedding, can actually come through. We try not to foster an idea of total dependence, so if someone comes in and if he or she would not have money, they can actually come and work part-time to get the things that they need, but they can also get necessary clothing, bed, and those kinds of things. We feed 800 to 1,000 people every week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. There's a hot meal there. Now, someone asked me, well, how do you do that? Well, we don't do it. We get help. There are several churches in the area, predominantly white congregations, for example, who come by and give us food. And so then we can prepare that food and be able to feed those people, because people need to eat more than just on Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever the case may be. We also, you saw shots of the children on the horses there. That's about 30 miles away. That's a ranch, that fancy looking building over behind. That's not ours. That belongs to the neighbor, the one with the rusted tin top. I didn't want any confusion on that. That's ours. the children's, some of them, have not been out into the country where there are trees and horses or whatever. So we take them out on field trips. One correction on the tape, the lowest score that a child can get at our school is 90%. And they have to earn the right to go on a field trip. They can work through their unit of work, get 89%, and I'm sorry. They have to do the entire unit over again, not the entire test, but the entire unit, until they can get a passing score of 90%. And this ensures them that child will not just be socially promoted from 1 year to the next and one grade to the next, and then finish 12th grade as did one of my my nephews, so it's very personal to me. Has a quick mind, very sharp, but he cannot read to this day, and of course he's probably 20, 21 years old now. And where is he? In and out of jail and doing drugs and that kind of thing, and it kind of hurts my heart. And there are untold numbers of our people who are like that. The young white guy, white lady you saw there were members of a group, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. And each summer they come into our neighborhood and they actually live in the housing in the neighborhood, and they give of their time, talent, and resources there. So Eric, the young man, volunteered there, as did Elizabeth, the young lady. And the children just loved them. Elizabeth, they both graduated from PLU. Elizabeth, after doing her student teaching last year and after having volunteered there, decided she wanted to teach for us this past year. She was an English teacher. We were delighted. And she came in right along with the other teachers at $600 per month. And we do take out income tax and Social Security. So then you can imagine the sacrifice even she could have been teaching as a first-year teacher, that we appreciate her dedication. But our black church then, we feel, has to be more than where we get together on a Sunday morning or Tuesday, midweek services or whatever, and praise the Lord. We're really trying to reach out and touch lives. Now, come by our church. I'll advise you ahead of time. Be prepared to stay. If you can't stay, then stay as long as you can, and then leave. Our Sunday morning Sunday school starts at 9:30, and we go until about a quarter until 11. 10:30, quarter until 11. 11 o'clock, we start morning worship, and we get out about 2:20. Nothing like the Vespers here. Yeah. In fact, you can add up all of your weekly Vespers that I've seen so far, and be one of our Sunday services, a little short probably. Then on Sunday night, we come back at 6:30, and we get out 10-something or so on Sunday night. But we don't even get up to preach until after 9 o'clock probably on a Sunday night. And so we have long services. But then sometimes we'll leave there and something needs to be done in one of these ministries, and we'll go ahead and do that. And we're up late because we know that our people need it. So then the black church then, we really appreciate what programs we have there. We also appreciate the model. And since we're talking about models tonight, that we've seen here at Holden, I appreciate the idea of a Christian community and the cooperation. It has really been a learning experience for us to see so many varied elements working together. And I've taken a lot of notes, things that we can do to even improve where we are, because we recognize that the Lord does require good stewardship no matter where we're found in life. James Cone came to Tacoma several years ago, and I know sometimes we talk about liberation theology, and he actually lectured for some of our settings there in the pastors' conferences, and we've read different of his works. But James Cone's theology is not the norm for all black theology. A lot of the things that he's saying, they're right on. And I think sometimes we can literally say whatever we want to say, but it depends on how we say it that can really turn people on or off. There's another gentleman, he's dead now, but Dr. Kelly Miller Smith, another black guy, and I think he taught at Vanderbilt, and he also came for our minister's conference there in Tacoma, Seattle area. And Dr. Smith is saying pretty much the same kind of thing that James Cone was saying, and you might, I know a lot of people have read Cone's book, but they have not read Dr. Kelly Miller Smith's book. So I would suggest that if you're interested in liberation theology, that that's another one that you might want to consider. And of course, black theology is a theology in the making. It's ongoing, and we're not locked into say this is theology. No, we feel like we're doing theology, and life for us is an ongoing process, and we're trying to see in every facet, what is God saying to me out of this experience, out of that experience, and how can I apply what he's saying to our ongoing relationship with one another and with the Lord. It's a struggle in the Tacoma area, and I'm talking amongst black pastors, to get them to see, for example, what we're doing. We're really not trying to do things for ourselves as far as economic enhancement. My wife was supervisor of a telephone company for 9 years. She had a team of a woman working for her, men as well, working for her there, and she did a very good job of that. I've had other jobs, and at one time I was affirmative action administrator for the Boeing Aerospace Company. And we've worked in the corporate world, and we know how to go in and out, and yet we feel very strongly that what we're doing for our children is going to plant some seeds down here and deter a lot of the negative things that'll happen years down the road. We know that we're only one of possible role models, and yet around the school, and I don't do it around the school, I love my wife. And if I decide I want to kiss her, I'll do it. And the kid will say, we've been married for 25 years, but we tell them, we expect you one day to grow up and get you one of these. Get you a wife or a husband, but we want you to take care of them, and we expect whatever you do to, you know, find a job, work hard, go to school, stay in school. We invite speakers to come by, role models, and I think someone here knows Tom Dixon. He's president of Tacoma Urban League, and Tom is also on the board of directors for our school. But he comes by, and the children see him, and they say, well, who knows? One day I might be able to do something like that. The director of support services for the Goodwill Games this past year was also our volunteer speakers bureau chairman there at our school. So he funneled a lot of people through there. So our children have seen athletes, and they've seen other people in various walks of life. One little girl came, she's in her early 20s, and she was no larger than some of our girls there. And I mean, a little black lady. And she worked also with the Goodwill Games this past year. They literally followed her around and said, oh, I like your clothes. I like your car. I like your this. And then we take them back in the office before they come. Our theme is work hard, stay in school, and respect others and yourselves. Love the Lord. We don't care what you talk about, but that's our underlying theme. And so she told them, you can have a car like this, you can have a clothing like this, what do you need to do? And I said, thank you, Lord. And so we have those kind of individuals coming in as well. But sometimes it's a struggle to get other black pastors, for example, to understand and see what we're doing. I quit as chaplain for the women's prison at Purdy, only women's prison in the state, and I served there for 2 years as state chaplain. Prior to being on the payroll there, I was volunteer for, I think, 5 or 6 years there, and knew that system going in and out. But I left that job with full benefits and went from all of those niceties to $700 a month times 9 months out of the year. So you can figure that out. And I actually had one pastor ask me, how are you going to make it? Well, we really believe the word of the Lord. This is a black pastor. We believe the word of the Lord, that the just shall live by his faith. Just live by faith. And faith is really having the right belief about God, believing that God will do what he says he will do. I quit that job in 1984. I have not been outdoors since that time. I have not had to go hungry except when we have chosen to go. We fast on from time to time. We should fast every Tuesday and every Friday according to our particular communion, but I don't always do that. But sometimes we go for several days and don't eat at all or drink anything and spend time in dedication to the Lord. And those are really the only times that I've been hungry in that particular time frame. But I had someone ask me, how are you going to make it? Well, we would know that this is a faith kind of a ministry, and we really would love for other black pastors, white pastors as well in the neighborhood, to start their own school. Catholics have been doing it for years. Lutherans have been doing it for years. And the old cliche, you know, give me a child until he's, you know, 7, 8 years old, and I don't care what he becomes thereafter. Because these are the years that are very important. And we're able to start, we saw the little girl there feeding the chickens. She is, how old is Brittany? She's 6, so she's probably about 3 then. And there's no dad in that family. And so in our church, they have a thing that every year they write out this big long decree and they roll it up and tie ribbons on it, but they read it to you in a threatening fashion before they give it to you on a Sunday morning service. And the children can go and adopt whatever dad they'd like. So a few wives, the curse of the children will be upon you or something, they say. So we've done that. And then another young lady adopted us as well on this past Father's Day, so we took her out at a different time and kept her, and little Brittany said, the last time we did it, that I want to go on a telephone ride. And I said, what in the world is a telephone ride? Well, a telephone ride, as she explained it, you go up to this little box, you know, and you drive your car up there, and then they say, may I help you? And you say, yes, I'd like a hamburger and a So we took Brittany on a telephone ride, and she was elated that she had an opportunity even to go and do that. One reason for the difficulty of getting others involved in this kind of a ministry is people believe they're not educators. You know, the Lord told us to educate our children. You know, Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and following. You know, hear Israel, the Lord our God is one, the entire great commandment. The Lord told us to educate our children. And when the Lord left there in Matthew in the Great Commission, he left the church in the hands of the church the responsibility for continuing to make disciples as well as educating our children. Other scriptures as well. And we believe that. But somehow, a lot of our brothers have been fooled that they are not educators. And we're saying that we cannot afford not to educate our own. Otherwise, they are making too many negative choices. Now, models in the black community and in the white community, we have a couple of models. Seminary, for example, you know, if you ask and talk to a white brother, he'll say, oh, where'd you go to seminary? I said, well, I didn't really go. You'll get that answer a lot. That's because we have one model and our white brothers have another model, our sisters, whatever the case may be. Now, there are more and more blacks going to seminary now. Now, the way this country was settled and the way the gospel flow has been, the gospel is actually traveling westward. And so when, you know, our forefathers hit the coast over here on the Atlantic, then we have our older schools and institutions back east, and you start coming out here, and later and later and later, and you have congregations out here, 10, 15 years old, 20, 30 years old, but you get back there, you know, hundreds of years old, and you walk through the cemetery and look, say, boy, that kind of thing. It's not the case out here. So black institutions of higher learning, and particularly seminaries and other schools, are just along with the flow of the historical development. And later on, we've seen even in the Seattle-Tacoma area where a black seminary or a Bible college will pop up and it'll die. Well, sooner or later it'll catch on. But a lot of people in those areas say, what is my model for education? A lot of whites will attend college and a seminary, and then they'll work as a youth pastor or whatever in their particular congregation. Pretty soon they're up to senior pastor and off they go. In the black congregation, we call it sitting at the feet of Gamaliel. And so then we attach ourselves literally to a senior black pastor. And we follow him around. And we learn to do whatever he's doing, from visitations to counseling to weddings, funerals, whatever the case may be. And at the appropriate time, we go before the appropriate governing board of our particular communion. And they determine our worthiness for being admitted into the ministry after having gone through that particular period of training. So our role model there is that we sit at the feet of Gamaliel. There are black Bible colleges popping up in Seattle, and even American Baptist Seminary of the West actually came to Seattle-Tacoma area several years ago, and it went for a while, but because many of our black brothers were not really even aware as to what it meant to go to school. And if they took one course every Saturday for a year, but they were only taking one course for, you know, 2 hours on a Saturday, they could not get into their mind that, wait a minute, why is it I don't even have a degree yet? This guy's offering me some kind of a certificate, and I should have, you know, an advanced degree by this time. So it's kind of hard to get that in many areas. Now, we believe that religion is our most important inheritance in the black community. And if you'll notice that Jesse Jackson, Benjamin Hooks, Martin Luther King, you name it, I think you mentioned Adam Clayton Powell the other day, the black church has really been the place where our leadership has been able to develop within this nation of ours. And yet, we also know that this is our most important inheritance on the one hand, and yet, on Sunday morning, I don't know about your churches, but on Sunday morning, and this is a general statement, but the most segregated hour in our week is 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Now, we have four, five, or six, or eight whites in our congregation there out of a small group that we do have. But even so, predominantly black. If I come to your church, predominantly white. And I go to the Mexican church. I preached over in Yakima several weeks ago. I done revivals over there in Spanish for that one pastor over there. Preach over there, all the Mexicans are together. So at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning, we have our most segregated hour of the week. And yet, it's through interacting one with another that we're going to be able to overcome a lot of the barriers that do exist within our society. Now, the black family is also... Okay, as I close, okay, and the, so I get three closings. The black family is also in serious trouble. And I had a lot of difficulty, and I've said this before, when I read literature about the matriarchal structure of the black family, I said, no, that's not the way it is. Well, I found out that the kinds of things my dad did with us was not necessarily the norm. So the black family is in serious trouble. We have the extended black family at one time. We were down south and back east. We had the model of the extended family. We didn't know that was the terminology, but we had mom and dad, and then we had Aunt Sally and Uncle John, and we had even the neighbors. We could act up, and they said, whose boy is you? So, ain't you Jim's boy? Yeah, you know. Then all of a sudden, we were in trouble there and disciplined. And then we were in trouble when we got home. The terminology back then was, I'll be seeing you. The terminology now is, I'll be suing you. And as a result, a lot of folks are living to discipline other people. But that was one model that we had at that particular time. One lady on our board of directors for the school, Mother Bradford, I talked about her. And I said, Mother Bradford, she's 78 years old. I said, our black family's in bad shape. I said, what in the world is the problem? She said, the swing shift. I said, what? She said, swing shift. I said, Mother, would you care to elaborate on that? She said she could remember it back during the war when this thing came in, and that up until that point, mothers were doing motherly duties. And this is not to, in any wise, take anything away from any woman. We are really free. The woman, the female, is free in Christ Jesus. But I think we let a lot of other thinking come in, and we don't see the freedom that is already ours in Christ Jesus. And as a result, a lot of mothers neglected whatever motherly duties they should have been about. And so then values are caught. They're not taught. And so then a lot of values that should have been thrown out by these mothers and then caught by these children, they really were not. So now we're facing these children on the street corners and in the gangs and in the other areas of our inner cities, whereas if mom had been doing her job, we wouldn't be faced with that now. It's a shame. I talk to elderly people. They are literally afraid to go out on the streets at night in our inner city areas. And not only some of our elderly, I kind of watch even when I'm walking, if I'm walking out at night, and for that very reason, there's a park in front of our house. And I could walk around there. I was thinking about that since I've been here. But one reason I don't walk early in the morning is that it's dark. And we've had high drug traffic in that particular area. So then I think if parents, and not to put all that blame on mom now, but if parents in general had been doing their duties, then this would not be. There is a matriarchal model that a close friend of mine, Mabel C., and what television station was King Five, but recently, Mabel C is probably in her 60s, and she's one of the nicest ladies that, she's a black lady, her husband was a pastor there, probably one of the largest black churches there in Tacoma, Bethlehem Baptist Church, and he's dead now, but she's one of the nicest ladies that you want to meet. She's non-judgmental. I mean, Mabel C just thinks everybody's great. I mean, that's just the way she is, and her home is really a stopping off place. Now, extended family, that's that. So Church Women United and some other group there in the Seattle area wanted to do a documentary on her family, and they chose her, and King Five ran it, and we watched it not too long ago. But Mabel C's there as head of that household. Her daughter lives there, and then their daughter's children live there, And then there may be a son or a daughter over here who's had problems for a while, and they'll just come in. You go in there, they're sleeping on the floor, they're up in a corner somewhere, they're eating, and they won't harshly judge or condemn anyone. And some are in church, some are not. Their dad was, her husband was, of course, a preacher for a lot of years, and he taught, you know, love for the Lord, love one another, and they are accepted one of another. So if there were a model that I really appreciate, it's Mabel Sees. And one thing she does, though, she makes it a point that to get together at Christmas time, and we met them, I think, in 1968 over in Yakima. He was my pastor then. And we started going every Christmas. So Christmas Eve night, we get together, we sing, we open gifts, we have a dinner. And every Christmas, and we've been going every year, we've probably missed about three since 1968. Every 4th of July, they get together. Every April, I think he died in April, 10 years ago. Every April, they asked me to come and do the memorial service there at the graveside. And then they have their family reunions. What this is doing is bringing that extended family concept back together. That's a model that we lost when we left from down south and back east and came up north and out west. We lost that, and we are suffering for it. But we have to, even when we look at the family, Jesus, your folks are looking for you. Who's my mother? Who's my sister, my brother? But he who is doing the will of the Father that is in heaven. So as we look for our models, once again, it's in Christ Jesus that we get the kind of model that we really are looking for. We have to rediscover the cross and know that it's in him and only in him that we can resolve a lot of these problems. We have to engage in servanthood. I'm not doing this because I, myself, my other self, you know, working around the school, I probably, we've been at the school 6 years. I probably would have left 6 years ago. If I had anything to do with it. But I feel very strongly that the Lord called me to this ministry. So I'm there. And until the Lord sends me elsewhere, I mean, plain as day, the Lord told me to go to Tacoma in 1976, and he hasn't told me to leave, and I'll be right there until he tells me to leave. But we have to practice servanthood. It's something, being a servant, and that's really the kind of underlying principle that is found there within our church. And at the same time, recognize that there are a lot of things that are not right in this society. Work hard to make them right. A couple of quotes, and then we'll have time for questions. President Johnson, 1965, speaking at Howard University. The family is the cornerstone of our society. More than any other force, it shapes the attitudes, the hopes, the ambitions, and the values of a child. When the family collapses, it is the children that are usually damaged. When it happens on a massive scale, the community itself is crippled. Unless we work to strengthen the family, to create conditions under which most parents will stay together, all the rest, schools and playgrounds, public assistance and private concern, will never be enough to cut completely the circle to despair and deprivation. So we feel very strongly if we can do those necessary things to have a positive model there in the church, love people in spite of who they are. We also have, I think, one Indian lady there in our congregation, and some from mixed family, mixed marriage backgrounds. We serve everybody. I said we feed 1,000 people a week. Most of those folk are Asian and white, and then probably black in that order. And we feed them because we are brothers and sisters in the Lord. And we recognize that as Paul stood there on Mars Hill, he said, to this unknown God whom you ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you. For it is in him that we live and move and have our being. And out of one flesh, you see, God made all of us. And your hair is kind of funny, and I know that. But that's all right. A Chinese guy came to Yakima years ago and spoke to us. And he said, all of our eyes look funny. And so we recognize that. And yet we are out of one blood. And so then I've had children around the school, and an Oriental guy, a Cambodian guy will say something, and they can sometimes humorously remark as to how this person talks. Don't do that. That's your cousin on your great, 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 great somebody's side, you see. Because God put us on this ball together, and we must learn how to work together one with another. So then, the black family, the black church, we're really pinning our hopes on them. And I'll close out by saying that the black male needs positive role models, doctors, scientists, teachers, lawyers, missionaries, preachers, you name it. And if we don't do something on a massive scale, the black male can literally go the way of a dinosaur. I believe with all my heart, and I don't go toward a conspiratorial theory of history, but somehow I believe so strongly that as I read in the Word of God, that, and I see such striking parallels, that Moses was a goodly child, but the decree had come that the Hebrew boys were to be destroyed. So what happened was, is Moses' mom hid him, and then when they could no longer hide him, they set him afloat, and there he is, there, and Pharaoh's daughter was able to raise him. But the decree to get rid of the Hebrew boys came from the highest level of a political level of that society. Move from there to Esther and Mordecai. There's another attempt to wipe out all the Jews. But from where does the command come? It comes from the highest level of political society. Move from there to the time when Jesus was being sought out by Herod. And then the babies were killed that were the age of our Lord at that point. From whence again does a decree come to destroy those people? Once again, it comes from the highest level of political society. Now, it's just a feeling that I have, and that's the reason that I'm committed to what I'm doing, that we have to rescue our black children. I've said it before, I said it again. Two old black guys talking. One old black guy says, that was my boy, I'd leave him out there. Other old black guy says, if that was your boy, I'd leave him out there too. But he's my boy, and I'm going to get him. And somehow, we have to rescue ours from the inherent dangers that are really putting one black behind bars, another one strung out on dope, and another one being messed up and drive-by shootings. That's where we are as a community. And somehow, if we can start with these young ones down here, I don't take old ones. I did a few years ago at the school, and they literally tried to undermine everything we were doing. They were not used to our discipline. We have a loving, caring discipline, and yet they could not fit in, and they wanted to do other kinds of disruptive things. So we take them no older than 12 years old, but we take them as young as 3. And somehow give us 3 or 4 or 5 years with them. And we feel that they will not be on the street corners threatening people, but they'll be the kind that'll say, may I help you across the street. And they'll not be breaking into your house, nor my house, but they'll know the difference between what is mine and what is thine. And that's a kind of a general overview of the role models for which we are discussing. There may be some questions you wanted to ask Sister Harris at this time.
Actually, there are two sides to it. The mixed marriages have always been more acceptable on the black side than they have the white, as a rule, from way back when they first started having them. And I think it's because that there are so many mixes in the Negro race, so to speak. Like, I'm part Indian, part this and part that. And so black people, as a rule, have had a higher tolerance for the mixture. Part of me, and I have a sister who married a white man and a niece who married a white man, and my niece has a baby that's about a year and a half old. Now, part of me would have preferred that they married black people because I just feel like that. The other part of me is the one that I talked about that's more tolerant because we have been discriminated against so long and frequently that the white side does not approve of this marriage, and so all their support will come from the black side. Then part of me is more tolerable. In our church, I don't think there's too much difference. The children are treated pretty much the same based on who you are and what you can do. And so I think that probably because of the generational bringing up, there's more tolerance on the black side of these marriages. So that the white people, and there are some, there's a white, two white ladies that are not married to black men. They just happen to belong to our church. And we still call them sisters, just like we call them black people sisters. And obviously, they've been there long enough. They don't feel anything else. They probably feel blessed. And they are an integral part of the church and of the worship and they sing in class. Like we sing.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
I was just wondering if you could elaborate. You know, you said that you really would have preferred that they hadn't been in a mixed marriage.
Well, in the sense that when you brought it up and you know, you guys were the bad guys, so to speak, it was kind of like treason to go get one of them. And so it was real difficult for my sister, my niece. It was 20 years later, which is not this man's child. My niece married a white man, and it was a big deal. But when Cherry married Don, it was way back when things were real sensitive, and it just didn't set well. We thought, you know, they've spurned us all these years, and now we're finally getting somewhere. Why would you go get one? And then, of course, the intelligent answer is that...
You didn't feel concerned for their safety or anything.
Oh, no, no, no.
I mean, sometimes I worry about that, like in Portland down in Oregon where I live, that there's a lot of stuff going on with...
No, there was no concern for their safety at all. There was nothing about safety, just personal preference.
Are they still married?
No. My niece and her husband are, and they'll probably be married till death do them part. But I think Cherry and Don probably got caught up in the struggles of society just because they were different and they were just drawn to each other out of the differences and maybe to flaunt, you know, to be individual. I think a lot of people get married for reasons like that. Just because it's so against the grain, that makes it attractive, you know, for big waters.
Yes, sir.
How many students do you have and work with in your school?
We have 40 students, and we work with them on an ongoing basis with their mother, their grandmother, sometimes even their pets as well. We have 40. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I was just wondering about your comment. I just wanted to make sure it cleared my mind. You're talking at the end about the white or the black male and how there's almost a plot that's going on to eradicate them. And are you indicating that you feel that it's from the highest positions of authority that this is happening? Is
yes, sir. But I also preface that by saying I did not want to engage in a conspiratorial theory of history. But this is kind of it hits me like that. So I guess I am saying that. And what happens is I see these little nickel and dime dealers on the street corners. And I know for a fact these black guys don't own the boats and the airplanes that are flying all these drugs in. So now if you really wanted to eradicate the drugs in our community, go down here. Because I've talked to people in the past and they fly in the Boeing field there and drop their load off there. One spot, not the only spot. And then so go down there and stop it there. It'll never make it to the hilltop area. So then why... You know, the question in the back of my mind is why is it that it gets all the way through there or through customs or whatever, not hits the street over there? So somebody somewhere, rather than on the street here, but at another level, is allowing that to come through. So it's those kinds of things that raise, you know, serious questions in my mind. And then along with that, I think she alluded in another session to one of the candidates and marijuana and whatever. No, don't you do that anymore. But I knew very well in the 60s when we were making a lot of fuss, you know, around the U in Cambodia and Kent State in that time frame, there was a man in Texas been in for 29 years in jail for marijuana. And so it's that kind of an imbalance that raises those kinds of questions. It's not just an emotional outburst, but, you know, we see this and yet we're perplexed as to why this would be allowed to happen. Yes, ma'am.
There's a lot of controversy now, particularly in college athletics, where there are a lot of blacks playing for colleges, and they're really almost like professionals because they're playing, but they're not really getting an education. Can you comment on that? And do you think blacks are really being used?
Sure. Yes, ma'am. I do, and yet, I'll first of all speak from personal experience, is that I was TA at the University of Washington. So I taught 100, 200, some 300 level classes in Spanish when I was in graduate school there. Now, I had one well-known athlete, black, who did not show up to my classes, and he'd come by every once in a while. My wife didn't do the homework in Spanish when I was teaching her, at home, and so she had to drop the course.
Hard nose.
And so that's just the way that I was brought up. So then I was really kind of feeling generous, and the guy was nice, but that was this was Seattle. There was another black guy driving from Everett every day who worked another job. His wife was pregnant and he was struggling, but he made a B out of the class. He was an athlete who very seldom showed up for class, and he had an office down at the Intramural building there and left his phone number after I sent out grades for that quarter to give him a call. So I called him up. You gave me a D, a D, a D. I sure did for that beginning Spanish class. At least you could have given me a C, you know. I said, let me tell you something. I was generous in even giving you a D. I really should have failed you for the kinds of things that you did in the class. So I was feeling generous there. So then I met another guy, and I called his name. You might have seen him sometime, but anyway, I won't do that. And I saw him at a function several years ago, and he said, oh yeah, how you doing, Moses? Man, that's the only brother that ever flopped me there in the, because I felt that the work should have been done. I do believe that it's wrong to engage in merchandise of their particular athletic ability, run them through school, and then when they get out, they have no really marketable skill, and they don't have the ability to continue to progress, and they've been used. To me, it's a form of slavery. I had a teacher when I was going to Ellensburg. He was white, but he left Ellensburg. I was there in the 60s. We turned in our English class. We turned in a theme. Every day, we met Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and we turned in a theme every day except the first day of class. He did not know us. And then the last day of class, because we had a final exam. And he graded like 1.3 and 2.7 and point, yeah, I saw somebody had a point something on one of their papers. But he left the University of Washington quite a few years ago because the president called him up and said, give this athlete such and such a grade. And he said, I will not do it. And so I suppose my upbringing kind of put me in the same line. So on the one hand, they are being used. But on the other hand, they know that even for a professional football player, average life score, years or so, and they're going to be gone, and that they must develop themselves and plan beyond that. And then blacks aren't smart enough to do anything other than run a ball. That's the quote-unquote. That's why you see a lot of black athletes, but why don't you see a lot of black managers and general managers and coaches or whatever? We have a few more. So they're, once again, for us, as we look at it in our society, we can run the ball down here, but when it comes to thinking, we're still dumb. And we can't do that. So I think it's wrong for them not to work hard and get the best that they can educationally out of that institution and be in progress. Pardon?
Oh, my time's up.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Do you try to travel to any of the other black colleges to try to sell your program, so to speak, to the other black schools or churches?
Someone asked me that, and the problem is the staff that we have, we wear too many hats. And so then, I mop the floor. I cook for the staff. I'll go out and I'll whatever needs to be done around the school, I do that. And then the hustle and bustle of the day, we really don't have time to do those kinds of things. And then when I am away, it puts additional pressure on the few ones who are left. So we're really kind of caught up. And yet, if we could get out and sell the program, that was the reason for the video, that we would get out and do that. But we're really hurting on actual manpower that would actually free me up to be able to go and do such a thing. And yet, it's in the plan somehow. And you're trying to make it here, just putting out a fire here. And yet, for long range, that kind of